Welcome to Takeoff, a points and miles podcast by 10X Travel. I'm your host, Bryce Conway. Today, I'm joined by Emily and Travis. We're going to be sharing some of our unconventional hot topic takes here in points and miles. But before we jump into that, as always, I want to ask, how's everyone doing today?
I'm good here. Yeah.
I'm doing good. We might have some hot takes, but at least there's not hot weather here yet. So
there's about to be some record highs in Denver. On Saturday, it's going to be 85 degrees.
Wow.
And I'm going to go skiing.
I mean, there's your first unconventional or controversial thing that you're doing on the episode, right? Going skiing when it's 85 degrees. That's pretty cool.
I'm actually using one of my free nights to stay at the Ritz-Carlton Bachelor Gulch to do some skiing. It's my
beautiful property.
Yeah, it's really nice, and it's closing day at the mountain. So,
is that like a big event?
At some mountains, closing day is pretty big, but Beaver Creek hasn't been historically. This is my second year doing it, so I think it should be nice. The grotto will be empty.
I'm going to be honest. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
There's like a spa with an underground grotto.
Oh, that sounds fun.
It is fun. Not quite as fun as the lounge bathtub, but we're getting there.
Yeah. Shout out to our last episode, which is a lot of fun talking all about lounges. And yeah, I enjoyed hearing the worst experiences from everyone. But if you haven't listened to that, take a minute, or maybe after this episode, head back and listen to that episode that we did on lounges. But today's one should be equally fun. We're going to be sharing some of our unconventional, against the grain opinions and advice about all things points and miles. This is going to be, this might ruffle some feathers, if you will, but we're good with that. We want to tell you the truth. We want to be transparent about the way we think about these things, because candidly, the points and miles world, and we are not exempt from this, can be subject to some groupthink. Like, you get folks who kind of go along with what others are doing, and then that happens for long enough and you reach a point where you start to question, like, wait, why are we doing it this way? So our hope is that this episode kind of gives a new perspective on some of these takes. I hope it's a lot of fun with what we're going to share today. I hope that nobody gets really mad at us for what we're going to share on this episode here today. If you do, just know that the worst way to punish us is to pull out the podcast app you're listening to right now, push 5 stars on the reviews, and we will never get over it, ever.
Never.
Yeah.
Never.
Yep. Five is actually the worst score you can give in this scenario. Yeah. Really,
this is like golf.
Yeah.
Some of these takes, we'll see how they go. I don't know. Let us know, by giving us that 5-star. It sends the message the strongest. But, some of these might be pretty spicy. So, feel free to let us know which level of spice. Is it scary spice? Is it, I don't actually know the names of the other Spice Girls. So that's
there's sporty spice.
Posh.
Oh, yeah,
posh spice.
Yeah. So 5 stars and leave a review saying which level of spice you think some of these takes are.
A quick funny aside, as we're starting here, and a reminder of that. Did you know that the KFC Twitter account follows 11 people?
Yeah, 11
it's
herbs
the
and spices.
Spice Girls and 6 random guys named Herb or whatever. Yeah.
Yes.
So 11 herbs and spices. That's awesome.
That social media manager knew what they were doing.
Oh, they knew what they were doing. Oh. Yeah. So we're going to jump into these spice takes here in just a minute. But first, if you are still new to Points and Miles, you feel like you just use a refresher, we recommend checking out the first 6 episodes of our show, where we cover a lot of the fundamentals of Points and Miles, giving you a baseline of which you can work and create your own unconventional or controversial takes on Points and Miles. Check out our Facebook group. You can ask questions, share your own spicy takes, if you will. It's the largest one on earth for Points and Miles. There's over 385,000 people in there. And perhaps most importantly, sign up for My 10X, linked in the show notes or at my.10xtravel.com. That's one simple tool. It's free, and it helps you manage all of your points and miles in one single place. You can access our course, learn all the basics on Points and Miles. You can use our Lounge Finder tool, Redemption Tracker tool. It just takes the entire Points and Miles game and makes it a breeze for everyone. So before we kind of jump into each of our own hot takes, if you will, let's talk real quick. We're going to go kind of free discussion here. What makes something a hot take in this space? And how much of this hobby do you think is kind of governed by that groupthink that we do occasionally see?
That's a good question, Bryce. I'll let Emily go.
Perfect. I mean, I think it's kind of like a chicken or the egg scenario. Like, there is a lot of groupthink, but it's because a lot of the times the nature of the industry just forces us into that. Like, we're at this point where if you look at the hotels, everyone loves Hyatt, and that's because it's really the only one left with kind of like a real award chart that gives you good value. So, like, yes, it's groupthink, where everyone's like, I only want to use my certain bank points at a Hyatt, but it's also like, that's where the best value is. So how do we get out of this cycle? That's kind of what my thought is on it. And as far as what a hot take is in the space, I also feel like that's kind of cyclical because some people in this space are like, they operate on hot takes. Like they love sharing things that are unconventional and that's what makes them great. So at that point though, is it even really a hot take? Well, we'll find out soon enough on this episode.
Certainly. I think hot takes are anything that's kind of goes against kind of conventional knowledge. Although after, you know, hearing your response, Emily, I do feel kind of like the need to say that there is a common scenario where the folks who are relatively new to the hobby kind of misattribute value like that, the Hyatt thing that you mentioned, to like groupthink, where they'll be like, yeah, the whole industry just seems to really love Hyatt. And like they tend to kind of bag on Delta for maybe their redemptions. And then they kind of assume like, oh, they either are being paid by Hyatt. It's like the super, you know, conspiratorial thing, or not, or like that we have like some sort of like beef with brands. It's not that. It's usually based on like value and such, but we are certainly not above kind of groupthink and our own susceptibility to that as well.
Yeah. I think part of it as well comes from when you're new to points and miles, especially if you haven't done a redemption yet, you're trying to justify why this is valuable to you. And you're often looking to external reasons to justify why you're participating in this hobby, whether you're brand new or you've only done a handful of redemptions. And I think a lot of the hot takes you're going to see really just come from our collective and individual experiences in this, whereby how we, you know, how Emily, Matt, myself, Bryce do points and miles now is less informed from trying to convince ourselves that there's value to be had. We know there's value to be had. Now it's figuring out how it works for us as individual travelers to provide the experiences that we want. And I think that that's really what causes groupthink to sometimes seem really, really prevalent, because you're trying to maximize based on the perception of others rather than based on what matters the most to you. And some of these hot takes, I think there's probably going to be some that many people strongly disagree with. And these are our opinions. These are what matters to me as a points and miles person. It doesn't mean that it applies to everyone. It doesn't mean that you have to do exactly what we say. I think it's more just the opportunity to share with you some different ways to think about points and miles that maybe you haven't thought of before. And even when you do think of it, you might still say, you know what, Travis, pound sand. And that's fine. That's fine. But if anything you should take away from this is think about how points and miles works for you rather than how it works for everyone else.
Yeah.
And I think, to say a quick second, anything I add to that too is most people lower your desire for getting other people's opinions. Like if you want hot takes, post a redemption that you did in our Facebook group. Like most people, like, yeah, of course, like we celebrate that. That's super like fun, positive. That's great. But you're always going to get a handful of folks that are like, oh, like you chose that hotel or like that redemption value. Like, I don't know about that. You know, there's always going to be some of that kind of pushback or people who can't necessarily see that others might have different things that they value than them. But, you know, I think when you learn enough this hobby, you get to a point where you can see how these takes might make sense.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is that this hobby it performs super well across social media, right? Like there's lots of content creators that exist in this space, and what sells and what gets them followers is like luxury trips, things that are super out there, insane lounges that we've talked about on the previous episode, first class flights, all this stuff. So it conditions you to think that it's a hot take to use your points at an airport hotel or to use your points at a hotel you're staying at for your kid's soccer game. When in actuality, probably 80% of people in this hobby are using their points that way. So it's not even really a hot take. It's just you see what's kind of like perpetuated in social media and you start to think that that's how everyone's doing it. So if I'm not doing it that way, I'm doing it wrong.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe y'all just want to get to our hot takes, but
yeah.
You know, some we if this is your first time, don't worry. The rants are normal across all episodes. So, but kind of on that, Emily, I saw a statistic recently that said in 2022, 2023, sometime around there, a few years ago, like the majority of people preferred domestic travel. You know, I think it was as high as like 85% of people, something around there. And like you said, you know, I literally this week used points to book a flight to Oklahoma City for a birthday party. And
is it lie flat or like backward facing? Or
and, you know, like it was really cool. It was, I think, 7,000 points each way versus paying a couple hundred dollars. Like Emily said, if I went and made a TikTok about that, it's not going to be as popular as me talking about a trip to the Maldives. And so this is just kind of our opportunity to share some of the less marketing friendly takes that we might have. But again, don't think all of them are that way. Some of these are ones that I think even we'll disagree with each other on. And that's kind of the point here, is to just encourage you to think about what matters to you in doing this. Form your own hot takes and leave them in the comments.
Yeah. Now I'm tempted to like change mine and just be like, United is completely an overrated airline, just for like the banter with Travis. So we're going to get to those hot takes here. We're going to do kind of round robin. We each have two that we're going to share. Like Travis mentioned, we expect to kind of banter a bit, push back. I'm at least for me, I'm inviting that from each of you. Let's hear it. We're going to go kind of do one at a time and then go back and each do our second one as we go. For each one, hosts, just please share like your rationale behind it, why your hot take kind of breaks with common advice in the points amount space. Real life examples of how you kind of apply this would be fantastic. And maybe if you start to change your mind after sharing it and hearing other perspectives, you know, let us know. We're just going to kind of have an open discussion on this. So with that said, let's get to our hot takes. I'll go ahead and just kick us off here right now with what I think might be the hottest take, or at least the one that's going to get the most replies in the YouTube comments and in the Facebook group. Here we go. I think that category spend optimization is a waste of time for most people. And by that, I mean, this is the folks who are carrying around 8 or more credit cards in their wallet. They have like the stickers or the sheets like, oh, this one's for gas, this one's for groceries, this one's for dining. Which card should I open for, you know, my monthly pet expenses? Like that type of focus. I think, you know, of course there are some folks to which this matters. Maybe you have a high level of spend and such. But I would wager that a good 80 to 85% of folks who are optimizing for this are just completely wasting their time and kind of failing to see where the end of that kind of effort for outcome journey takes them, to where they're sitting in line at Panera about to buy like a $4 cup of coffee, looking at their handy sheet and like, oh, which one of these cards is going to help me? Not realizing that like the net impact is like 0.2 cents. So that's my spicy take. I know a lot of folks kind of approach like credit card selection with like, oh, you know, look at how this card earns points on spend and try to map that with, you know, your lifestyle and such. And I think that just opens them up to so many kind of like myths or kind of false beliefs, thinking, you know, gas tends to be a common one where it feels like gas is something you spend quite a bit of money on because it's one of the few things you buy where the price changes almost every day, sometimes dramatically. And people will drive across town to like save a few nickels on per gallon of gas. It's just like hyper in your mind. But if you actually sat down with like a pie chart of your budget, gas is probably not a huge percentage of that. And in the net difference of using like the best card versus an okay card in that doesn't add up to much. And I think that bottom line, most people are just really pulling their hair out to ultimately earn maybe a net difference of like 10 or 20,000 points per 6 months or so. And then you look at the fact that credit card bonuses are in the range of 50,000, 100,000, sometimes 200,000 points. It's like, congrats, all that effort earned you like 1/5 of a single credit card sign-up bonus. You know, that's my take.
In practice, I agree with you, but I have to go back to the fact that with Virgin Atlantic's recent award chart changes, with flights across an ocean being like 6,000 points, maybe earning an extra like 10 or 20,000 points in 6 months is not such a bad idea.
There we go. Yeah. That is a fair point. Yeah, totally understand that too. And I guess I do need to kind of fill in my rationale why it breaks with common advice. I will give some kind of real life examples of how I kind of apply this to my own points amount strategy. I basically give almost no thought to like what card I use for any purchase under about $100, unless it's like super obvious. Like maybe I'm out to dinner and I'm carrying like my go-to card for dining. Like, okay, I generally know this stuff kind of on the, you know, the back of my mind better than most, given what I do. But I just create that mental space for myself where it's like, you know what, it doesn't particularly matter. I'm going to earn hundreds of thousands of points this year from credit card sign-up bonuses, or even from just using a not ideal card and trying to like game through, especially when you're out in a social setting, like which one of these cards I want to use, just feels like it's not worth the mental effort. Part of that might be because I'm aging a little bit and mental effort is like maybe deteriorating. You know, some of that might come just other circumstances in life just appear to be more important, and I'm not that person who puts in that much effort anymore. But I do think that this is a phase of the hobby that a lot of people go through. You kind of start, you get really excited about the power points and miles. Maybe you make your first redemption and you're like, wow, these things really do have incredible power. So I'm going to do everything I can to earn as many of them as possible, which to me feels like you kind of start to tiptoe into that, like the world of folks who will move a few hundred bucks back and forth between high yield savings accounts because one gets like 0.15% higher interest. Never like doing the math to realize that it's like $1.12 per month of difference. And like you spent an hour researching it. So I guess I would encourage to the many of you who are listening to this, who are probably having a visceral reaction to what I'm saying, feel free to A, share that in the comments. I want to hear it. But B, just do the math once. Just pick like whatever middle of the road card you have. What is the net difference in points in a monthly basis between using like your ideal card versus like your middle of the road card? Assign a value to those points. Maybe use 1 cent per if you want to have a benchmark. And then determine how many actual dollars of value difference does that make in a typical month? And just ask yourself, is that worth the mental effort? And if the answer is yes, good. You went through it. Like you're aware of that. That's great. But I imagine that many of you will come to that conclusion of like, wow, I'm putting a lot of thought and effort into, you know, tens of dollars per month difference in using the ideal card for every single situation.
Cool.
Travis, you feel like you're waiting to, you're waiting to hit me up here. So Travis is like cracking his knuckles over here.
Yeah. So this is really interesting because the approach I take to category spending is I have a few cards for my highest categories, you know, like groceries. I have a card that is my default grocery card. I'm not juggling multiple different ones. I have one whose return I'm happy with. And my simple way of deciding it is if I'm working on a bonus, I use that card. When I'm not, like whatever card I'm trying to get the new bonus on. When I'm not, I've got my other default card. And to me, this is a very good middle ground way of doing this. It lets me generally optimize in the places where I'm going to have the highest return, but I'm not shuffling cards in and out all the time. However, you know, Bryce said, do the math. And
Travis has got his calculator.
Did you do the math? Am I about to get completely owned right now?
I'm very interested to see what this does to your approach, Bryce, because you mentioned you might get the equivalent of about half of a card sign-up bonus a year. And that's fair, right? Like, let's say you're spending $15,000 at grocery stores a year and you can get 3 or 4 points per dollar versus one. You know, that's a net difference of 30 to 45,000 points. We'll call that roughly half of a card bonus. By itself, that doesn't sound like a lot. I'm gonna move the mic a little closer for this one.
Oh man, here we go.
Oh no.
But I looked at our 2023 reader demographic survey where the median member of our community was opening 3 cards per year. So if you're opening 3 cards per year, earning an extra half a bonus is about an extra 20% total points that you're earning for the year. And so it's really funny because when I first saw this, I was generally on board with Bryce and was like, yeah, I think there's a little bit of optimization you can do. But when you're talking about a 20-ish percent increase in the number of points that you're earning a year by optimizing, I actually think that that's pretty significant for most people. I do agree with kind of doing the assessment of, is it worth the effort versus maybe bumping the number of cards you open to 4 is probably a little bit lower effort than trying to optimize for category spend. But if you're not able to do that for whatever reason, I think you can't discount the additional value that you can get from optimizing with the current cards that you do have. So that's my argument on it. Had to pull some data into this one.
There we go. It's hard to argue with data. Yeah, I'll share a couple of quick counters to that. I guess the first is, the assumption of like a 1x earning on everything. I guess my hope is that most people have some sort of what is often referred to as a daily driver card. That's like a catch-all for the spend that's not going toward earning a bonus. Usually that's around 2x, depending on which card you're using. There's a number of options to choose from. So I think the delta between like optimized versus baseline might be a little bit narrower than you think. But I would also push back on like the, and you kind of said this same point, like the 4 cards per year. It's probably less effort and way more points to just put any thought into like maybe a 5th card or however many fits your lifestyle at the moment and use that to earn the sign-up bonus, which ends up being more than an entire year of kind of doing the math and all the numbers and such and kind of end up happier on their side. Of course, also acknowledging kind of life circumstances. It's one thing if you're, you know, new to this, maybe like young, single, no family, you know, like a job that might leave plenty of time for you to pursue outside interests and you have the time and mental space to kind of put into this, great, go for it. I guess when I put this point on there, I'm mainly thinking of like the particular scenario of maybe like you have like a somewhat skeptical P2 who's like barely on the fence with this. And then you hit them with like a spreadsheet that you printed out and laminated. And then you text them 2 minutes after they leave Kroger. Why did you put that on that card? I'm so mad at you. Like we could have earned another 150 points if we put it on this other card. And like, guess what? The net result of that type of effort is going to be less points overall and perhaps a strained relationship. But we do see that sometimes where it's like the, like kind of badgering folks about wrong card or this and that. But I think we're mostly saying the same thing here. And it, caveat for most people, but I think the average person just thinks about this kind of way too much.
I do generally agree with that, that most people take it a little too far.
Yeah, but I also think overthinking it like that skews way more beginner in the hobby than it does like intermediate or advanced. Because like once you get into this, you're like, wow, I got to earn more points. Maybe you just finished your first redemption and you're just desperate to figure out ways to earn more. And so you get kind of like tripped up in that, well, which card will earn me the most on my Starbucks coffee?
Yeah, and I guess my concern with that scenario is that I think a fair amount of people end up burning out of the hobby because they get stuck there. They start, they're like, this looks like a lot of work. How do you all like do this thing where you like know every card to use? And they don't realize like most of us don't. You kind of just get past that phase. But yeah, I do think a fair amount of folks just kind of think that the people who are doing these incredible redemptions and earning all these hundreds of thousands of points are getting there because they have like the best systems to like get the most points possible. I think in most cases that's not true.
Yeah. Okay. I saw a really interesting post in the Facebook group the other week where someone was pretty new and they were like, how are you earning 1,000,000 points? How are these people earning 1,000,000 points? Mm-hmm. And lots of people chimed in. And of course, there's people with businesses who have higher expenses and all that. But there were a lot of comments that were like, that's 4 cards, you know, and that's kind of pretty close to what our audience is opening in a year. So it's a much more attainable target than you think it is when you're first jumping into this.
Yeah, completely agree. All right. Emily, can you hit us with your first hot take in points and miles?
Okay. Yeah. There's a lot of inconvenience in points and miles travel, and I will happily like do all of the inconveniences to make a good trip for myself. I'm sure there are other people out there that work this way too, but like I've kind of been talking about, when you see on social media, points travel looks like it's all about luxury stays and flights, and it can be, but most of the time people have seriously inconvenienced themselves to get to that place, me being one of those people. A few examples, we went on a trip to Lisbon a couple years ago, and within the first 3 nights, I had stayed at 3 different hotels, and that's because the hotel that I wanted to stay at for longer wasn't available until 3 days after I got there. So I stayed at a Moxie, I stayed at a hotel I booked through the portal. I think I stayed at one other Marriott hotel before I even got to the one where I was really looking forward to spending my time at. That is incredibly inconvenient. But I'll just post a picture of like the 3rd hotel I went to that looks really nice. So that's one of the times we did this on our honeymoon. We had like 4 nights at Ventana Big Sur. And then a 5th one that was, there was a gap of 1 night. So I moved hotels for 1 night and then went back to Big Sur. I'll do this for people's weddings. I'll use free night certificates, you know, stay at a Hilton 1 night and then move to an IHG because I have 2 free nights and that's what makes it cheaper. I've done weird repositioning flights, flying back from Paris to DFW, then taking an Uber to the other Dallas airport to fly back to Denver. I will take an 18-hour layover just so that I can get a business class flight. Like, there's all these things that are going on in the background that you're probably not aware of as a viewer. And I am all for it. And I recognize that this is definitely like a privileged position to be in at the moment. Like families that are traveling with their three kids, you're not going to pick the 18-hour layover. You're not going to move hotels three times. I get that that's unrealistic for a lot of people. So I'm just trying to take advantage of it while I can. And I'm sure shortly I will no longer be hotel bopping around.
I like this one. It definitely, I would probably be mostly on the other side of this, yeah. But I'm hesitant to kind of like jump right in and pounce on this because I was at one point in the exact same mindset, right? I was taking the tram four terminals away to visit a lounge on a 90-minute layover because I didn't want to pay, you know, 20 or 30 bucks for a sandwich close by. Or I just, maybe, candidly, probably just want to go in and take a picture that I was in the lounge, right? Like, look at me. Like, I paid $550 a year and transited four terminals to get this free, air quotes, free sandwich and drink. But yeah, I think part of it is like people leaning into like the fun of it. Like, it feels like you're kind of like the outsider who has the tricks. But then on the other side, you go to like the wedding and everyone's at the wedding hotel afterward. And then you're Ubering 25 minutes in the suburbs because like you had a Hyatt free night cert to burn.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. You know, I guess it's a balancing act is what I'm ultimately trying to say.
Yeah.
Travis is going to be on the opposite side of this one too.
No, I am a bit. I'm much more willing to inconvenience myself for flights than I am hotels. Like, to me, once I'm at my destination, I don't want to be spending my time having to check out and move to another hotel and then stay there one night and check out and move to another hotel. Like, I want to maximize my time on the ground.
Slightly other way, I like to minimize the amount of time that I have a roller bag on a cobblestone street.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's the worst.
Yeah, you know, and I go so far as I will stay at a lesser hotel than where I want to have that continuity. This happened to us when we went to Paris in 2024. I really wanted to stay at like the Park Hyatt, but it wasn't available with points every night. It was two nights, but I just stayed at the Courtyard instead because it just wasn't really worth it for me to change hotels. Although I did change for New Year's Eve, so that way I could be closer to where everything was. So it's kind of one of those, my gut reaction is no way for hotels. And then I find an example where I literally did that, but for flights, oh, absolutely. I will reposition. I, on that exact same trip, Lufthansa opened first class availability to Mexico City and we were leaving New Year's Day. So on New Year's Day, after being out until midnight, I had to get to Frankfurt because only one flight was available from Paris to Frankfurt. So I put my wife on that. I, however, still had to get to Frankfurt. So I woke up at 4 a.m. on New Year's Day to catch a train from Paris to Frankfurt, just so that way I could fly Lufthansa first class from Frankfurt to Mexico City, and then had to book another ticket to reposition from Mexico City back to Houston. Keep in mind, the flight I was already on was Air France from Paris to Houston. So I traded off a nonstop and added in a train ride, an extra night in Mexico City, and an extra flight. And waking up at 4 a.m. on New Year's Day after being out until like 1 in the morning. So yeah, I'll do this. I'll do this, especially for flights.
If you want to see real controversy and pushback, next time make your wife do that route while you take nice easy flight. I want to see that episode. Do it for the pod.
easy decision of who got the flight from Paris to Frankfurt. So
My flight that I had before doing this weird Dallas Uber reposition was a direct flight from Paris to Denver. So
easy.
I'll add an Uber and an extra flight. Why not?
I think I'm mostly on board with this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm on board except for hotels. Like, I would say that was the exception, not the rule.
Yeah. Packing up and changing where you're staying is like becomes more difficult, I feel like, as you go. Well,
Bryce, we have to keep in mind, like, Emily will go on a 7-week trip with just a carry-on. If I go on a 7-week trip, I my whole closet's with me, and I don't know why. But so if I was like Emily and could figure out how to perpetually travel out of a carry-on, maybe.
Yeah.
But
well, also, if you're only spending one night at three different hotels, you're never really unpacking. So
right.
You just zip up the suitcase and you go to your next hotel in the morning, and if your room's not ready, you store your luggage with them, and then you just go out exploring. Easy peasy. Isn't that right, Bryce?
Don't you want to? I'm flipping. I'm against that. Nope, that sounds awful. Like, there is nothing more frustrating than those periods in between check-in and check-out where, like, I don't have a home temporarily. Yeah. And, like, yeah, I don't like that feeling. It's like, I'm not, even in a normal day, I'm not going into my hotel during that time, but the thought that I can't just hurts. Mm. You know? Yeah. Okay. You had me there in the first half, Emily. I don't know. I'm coming back around. But a good hot take. Travis, you are up next.
Yeah, I'm going to go with what I think is my hotter take of the two here. Points hoarding is okay to a limit. So what do I mean by points hoarding? A lot of times we talk about earn and burn. And in general, I agree with that. But I do think that there's some good reasons why hoarding points is acceptable. And what we mean by hoarding points is building up a large stash of points. Where I think people get it wrong is when they do it without purpose. They do it just to say they have a large amount of points. When I'm talking about points hoarding, I'm talking about having a stash of points amongst a variety of different programs, even if you can't use those in the next 12 to 18 months. And I think that's fine, and in fact, preferable for me, because it allows, whenever I'm looking to book a trip, it allows for me to have multiple different options to work with to bring the trip together as a whole. Now, that being said, whenever I do have points with an airline or hotel, I always try to prioritize those on my next trip because those are subject to a devaluation from the airline or hotel. If I've got points with a bank that are flexible and one program devalues, okay, it just means I'm not going to look at that program later. But banks are not in the business of devaluing their own points generally. So having a healthy stash of points, particularly with a variety of different banks, is something that I find works really well for me and that is totally okay to do. You know, someone who's flexing that they've got 10 million points with one bank, that's a little bit too far. But basically having a stash between different transferable currencies to where I can book any trip from just one bucket of transferable currencies is kind of like where I like to stay. Or put another way, I like to have about 24 months worth of points. I like to have enough points to know I can do the trips I want over the next 2 years, even though devaluations might occur and I have to rethink my plans during that time. That's very comfortable for me. It works really well for me. And so that's why my hot take is points hoarding is fine to a limit.
Do you do that intentionally, or do you just find that you can't spend them as fast as you're earning them?
It's a bit of When it first came up, it was not intentional. It was because during COVID, I was able to build up a lot because I wasn't spending them. But I've found it way nicer when planning my trips. You know, my first full award redemption I did was to Hawaii with one bank's points, and I had to make just that work. And I obviously did, but it just felt a little bit limiting. Whereas now, you know, I can pull some from this bank or this bank or this bank. And I just like that better. It works better for me.
Now I'm sitting here wondering if we need to revise the course so that, you know, points and miles baby step number one is to build up a 12-month emergency fund of points and miles. Before you redeem anything, don't even think about it.
Oh,
you know?
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
No, I generally agree with that take, Travis, but I do want to kind of add another layer here with what I see in practice with our readers in this situation. And that is they have like that kind of stash of points all over the place that you described, but then they have a trip that comes up. They have to take it anyway. They can't find like the ideal redemption. Like there's not a saver one, or like it's not a value that I love. So I'm just going to pay cash. And then they end up doing that kind of over and over and over, almost never redeeming their points because they kind of tell themselves, oh, they have like this future value. But of course you do that to, you know, a certain degree. And it's like, well, what's the point? What is the point of all these points? If you're just saving them for some like ideal use that might never come. And that's where I think it becomes like the more sinister side of that belief of, yeah, you're just sitting on things that aren't going to end up being anything for you. So how do you think about that? Have you ever paid cash for a trip that you could have booked at a, let's call it like a C minus valuation? And you're like, I'll save those for a lie flat seat, you know, over an ocean sometime.
Absolutely. And I don't know if this sounds arrogant or not, but maybe it does. But it's one of those lessons that comes from having done this for almost a decade now. I've learned what level of value is right for me and where my priorities are. And I've talked about it a lot of like a minimum redemption value, and I won't get into that yet. But, if it doesn't, like my minimum redemption value is a little bit higher than where other people might land. And that comes from experience, from having done this for a while, to be able to, I think, fairly gauge that. So it's not something that I think someone who's new necessarily has the experience to effectively evaluate. But I do think that for people who've been in this hobby for quite a while, it's fair to sometimes decide not to use points because the value's not quite where they want it to be. And they're holding on to them for a future value that might never come. And that's the risk that you're highlighting, is that future value might never come. And that's just a risk that I'm comfortable taking because I've had enough experience to effectively weigh the pros and cons of doing that.
On the counter side of that, if you've got 24 months of points built up and there's a booking that like wouldn't be a great value, why not use points? Because by the time you're even close to maybe run like the 2 years of using the points that you have already, like you might have earned that value back by that point.
Retweet.
You're not wrong.
Plus there's something to be said, I guess, for, you know, the old time value of money. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Especially lately, you could like, you know, use the points, save the cash, put that in the market and lose like 15% in like a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a great strategy.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, you're not wrong by any means. I probably could earn those back, but I guess at this point, I feel doing it this way puts me in a nice balance, kind of going back to overworking, earning points and redeeming points. Like both don't take a ton of energy for me. And
especially if you don't focus on category spend. Sorry, continue.
And having this nice stash means if I'm in an earning phase and I get declined for a card for whatever reason that I was kind of relying on for my strategy, which happened to me pretty early on, it's not really a stressor. You know, it's okay, well, maybe I'll wait 6 months and apply for that card again. So it gives me the flexibility of time on the earning side as well, to where it's not much of a stressor. You know, there was one card I was trying to get for about 2 years and I really wanted it, but every time I applied, I got denied. But finally I got approved. And if I was relying on that specific card for my future trips over that time period, that would have stressed me out more than the risk of devaluation. I guess that's probably the best way to put it, is it just reduces the stress. Stress is a bad word. It reduces the anxiety or worries of needing to go through the whole process because I buy myself time on the earning end.
Yeah. And I guess counterpoint to my own counterpoint is like, if redeeming points for a certain booking is not meeting your minimum value, maybe you're earning enough points by paying cash for it that you'll get more value out of those points that you earned. I don't know. And now I'm just talking myself into a loop, but
Now, I've so definitely come around to Travis's position too, but I do think that we are focusing on kind of like the purely like rational, logical side of things. And I think all that makes sense, everything that you just said from the numbers standpoint. I will say from kind of my experience in engaging with all of our readers over all this time, the situation you describe of kind of points hoarding often has like another layer to it. That's, I would almost say, like psychological, where people are so hesitant to part with those hard-earned points because it just feels like they're kind of gone for a moment. Mm-hmm. Like you often hear like those phrases like, oh, I just love seeing like all those points. Or I love kind of having those. And it's like the, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too. But on that regard, I will say, I think that we just launched the most effective tool for dealing with this on a psychological level. And that is our redemption tracker. because so many folks I've talked to have like have been telling me about how that has helped, because it's just so draining to like, you earn all these points over all time because you're focusing on every nickel and dime that you're spending at the grocery store and what card to use. And you have hundreds of thousands in your account and you book something and then you see your account balance drop to like 40,000 and it just feels so draining. But you have the opportunity within My10X now to log that redemption where you can actually map out, what did you book? How many points did you spend on it? What was the cash price of it? And it almost just gives it this like little place to sit in your mind and in your My10X account as like a trophy or like a tombstone on a wall of sorts. And that really has helped a lot of people with that you know, anxiety around parting with a huge sum of points. And I'm really glad that we had that kind of act. That was not by any means the primary attempt at or benefit of that feature, but it has definitely helped.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, I want to take a second to just, I don't know, talk to our audience real quick of what Bryce just said, like, isn't in this outline, right? The surprise, like, we put together our notes and we actually, like, plan and prepare for this. But, you know, that wasn't in there. And, you know, I think sometimes people can hear stuff like that and think, oh, well, they're just trying to push their own thing and get us to use that. And of course, like we're a business and that's, we want people to use it. But the reason why we do stuff like this is to help you, to help overcome not just the barrier of knowledge and understanding, but also these emotional barriers that people experience in points and miles. Like that's why we do this. We do the work that we do to put our audience first. And yeah, maybe it can sound like we're just pitching something, but we're doing it because we want to make this easier for you. We want you to help find your travel dreams. And that's what motivates us to get on here and record this podcast and talk to you. So, you know, I don't know, maybe we'll cut that out, but nope. Maybe it feels extraneous, but you know, I want you all to know that we do this because we're passionate about it and we care and we're excited to see we're so lucky to get to share these points and miles and travel experiences with all of you. And that's why we're excited to like share what we do and how it can help you.
Yeah. And that was not like, as I mentioned, almost an accident. Yeah. Now that everyone is hopefully feeling like, oh, like good about us. We'll come back around to our second round of spicy takes here in a minute. And I'm up next. And for the record, a lot of the things I say on these podcasts are not in the outline. And if you watch on YouTube, you can probably tell when you see the other hosts like kind of all sit up and like scramble, like, wait a second. Bryce just completely went off script here. That's kind of the way I do things. And maybe that's one of your spicy takes, kind of. We'll see. But yeah, well said, Travis. And thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
All right. Bryce's second hot take here. Kind of similar to the first one. I think that most time spent thinking about the value of points and miles that you're redeeming is also a waste of time for a lot of people. I'm talking to the cents per point maximizers. And to be clear, this isn't quite what we were just talking about, Travis, where it's like set your kind of minimum, think about whether you want to redeem it. That's just kind of logic. That's good strategy. I'm talking to the folks who are like the first thing in the redemption post in the Facebook group is the cents or you know cents per point valuation. Like and you kind of get that vibe from some folks in the hobby where like that seems to be the thing they're optimizing for. It's like, hey, I took two positioning flights to a country on the other side of the world so that I could book a saver fare in this insane flight with a shower and a bar from city I had no desire to visit to city I had no desire to visit. And I got 18 cents per point of value. And like, okay, like I respect like that kind of part of the game where it truly becomes like a game that you're trying to beat. But to me, when I see that, it kind of feels like the same logic that I think all of us are subject to every time we walk into Costco and it's like, all right, we need ketchup and bananas and Diet Coke. And you
where did you get my shopping
$600. Yeah, exactly. I'm drinking a Diet Coke right now. But then you leave with like $600 of stuff. And it's like, oh my goodness, like this was on sale because like, you know, you get three for the price of two. And like now you have three like large vats of ketchup. And it's like you're optimizing for like the value that you got per like unit of whatever money or points. But never thinking to ask yourself, is this what I actually most wanted? And I think this is one of those things that a lot of people go through as a, like a, kind of a phase in the hobby. You kind of learn about cents per point and it feels like you want to maximize kind of everything in our culture. You go to the buffet and you aren't even hungry, but you go back up again because it's like, I got two meals. You know, that type of thinking, I think is everyone's subject to it. But I think I would encourage everyone to try to get past that. Cents per point is a great metric to determine if you should redeem your points or not, or, you know, maybe there's a potential better use. But if it's guiding like what you're actually booking, ahead of what you want to do, that's where it becomes kind of a problem. And I'll give a quick last thing before I get some probably flack on this one. The kind of mental test I put myself through when I'm going through redemption to avoid this type of thinking is, would I do this if I had to sign an NDA? Like, would I make this redemption if I couldn't post on social? I couldn't tell anyone about it. Like, and if the answer is no, like, yeah, enjoy your amazing flight from city to city they don't care about. You can't tell anyone about it. If that drains the thought of the trip for you, there's a high chance that you might be subject to this type of thinking. And just give it a second thought. Do it. If you want to do it, by all means, please do. Post about it. We all love the fun, fancy pictures. But just give it a little bit of thought of, are you optimizing for value or optimizing for happiness?
Yeah, you're not going to get any flack from me. You know, my big thing here too is that most people craft their points valuation to sound as high as possible and don't apply any like reasoning to it. And if this applies to you, I'm so sorry, but that's not.
That's why we did this episode.
Take. Yeah, yeah. you know, like I'll give an example for me. I'm going and staying at a hotel in Lake Como this summer. Super excited about it. You know how much that hotel costs? Well, in Lake Como in the summer, it's like 2,000 euros a night. Sure, I could go and calculate the actual cents per point based off of that. But the reason why that's so useless is because there's no world where I'm paying 2,000 euros a night for a hotel.
Yeah.
The actual value I'm getting is really replacing how much would I be willing to spend on a hotel per night in Lake Como based off of my own budget or whatever. And that's probably a more accurate representation of it. You know, people don't take into consideration like, oh, well, how many times did I have to reposition to take this flight? And what did that cost me? And let me factor that in. So a lot of times
Emily feels triggered, by the way, for her first hot take here.
Yeah, Emily, but like,
well, yeah, I don't think I had calculated anything, any kind of value out of doing that. I just did it because I wanted to.
Okay, see, that's exactly the point. Yeah. It's like you do it because you want to. You know, if you ever see someone talking about 10, 15, 20 cents per point, and I used to be guilty of this. If you find some of my own old articles, which I'm sure some of you are going to go around digging up on the site, I was guilty of this too. Bryce, too.
I think our most read article of all time was how I saved $28,000 on a trip to Thailand and only spent $312.
Yeah. So because you were going to pay $28,000.
For sure. If you couldn't redeem those points. What 23-year-old doesn't do that? Yeah.
I mean, I think you can still post about that and calculate it, but it's the difference of value that you're getting versus savings. Like if you say you saved $28,000, no, you didn't. You may have gotten $28,000 of value because that's what it would have been worth to book it, but there's no like savings involved in that.
Right.
Yeah.
Unless you really do have a budget of $28,000, and then like, why are you wasting your time figuring out how to travel on points and miles?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, people are going to say that none of this was impromptu, but now I'm going to push our redemption for Ken. And the reason why I want all of you to go out and use it is it does calculate a value for you, but I'm really interested in like a year or so to see what the actual average value that people are getting for their points, because like to a lot of things Emily said earlier and Bryce said earlier as well, like people are less likely to interact if you say I got 2 cents per point on this redemption because it doesn't sound as exciting, but you say 17 cents per point and everyone wants to know how, because that becomes the goal. And that's just the wrong way of thinking about it. It's just take the trip that you want to take, get the experiences you want, and the value you get is the value you get.
I also think an important caveat here is like we're talking as if the most important thing to people here is like the destination. There are people out there who just love to fly on specific airline products. If that's you, it disregard this entire thing, because like take whatever repositioning flights you want to fly the product that you want to fly, if that's what matters to you. But there've been a few times when I used to work as an award booker where people would say, I want to go to Italy, but I want to fly through Doha because I want to fly on the Q suites, which at that point is like, if that's really what you want, sure. But if you just want to go to Italy, that's not the way to do it. You are flying so far out of your way just to fly on a product that you think might be what you want because that's what you see everyone talking about and getting excited about. But for you, maybe what's exciting is eating a delicious plate of pasta in Rome. I don't know.
Yeah, everyone loves that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll wrap up this hot take with the cringiest line in any recent podcast episode. Ready? Audience, I'm talking to you again, right? Cents per point, not super important. What's important? Smiles per mile. Okay, I'll see myself out. All right.
That'll do it.
Let's leave that there and move on to Emily's second hot take here. So Emily, floor is yours.
My second hot take is, and I think Matt has said this on one of our episodes before, and I was so against him, but now I'm finding myself agreeing more and more with him, which is that I may be at the point where free night certificates are not that useful to me anymore. And for a long time, I was like a staunch supporter of free night certificates and cards that gave you free nights. And I'm not completely saying phase them out, but this is the first time in a few years where I only have one wedding to go to. And that's how I was using so many of these. I was using them and hopping to different hotels because it was inconvenient, but convenient price-wise. And now I'm kind of in this place where the prices on the hotels that you're trying to use these free nights at are more expensive than the value of the free night. Like, I can't find a 25K Marriott anymore. I don't know if it even exists. So I'm getting to the point where, like, I have these IHG Hilton Marriott free nights, and I can't even find a way to use them before they expire. And I don't like that, because that for so long, it's like, that's such an easy way to to recoup the annual fee on these cards. It's like, okay, I'll just use my free night for a $200 hotel on this card that has a $95 annual fee. Boom, done. But now I'm like, I'm letting them expire, and that's just wasteful and not helpful. And especially when you're only getting like one with each card, it's like you have to put yourself in this inconvenient position where if you want to use them to go on a little weekend trip, you're doing what I said I would do all the time, which is switch hotels. But like, for a two-night trip, do you really want to do that? If it's longer, I'm still on board. But like, am I really using these two free nights to go to Austin and moving from a Marriott to a Hyatt and then flying home? Not really. And there's not that many places in Colorado that I can use them for like a road trip. So I'm starting to feel like I might be phasing these out. And I don't think I ever thought I would be there.
Zero pushback for me. I'm entirely on team with this. I think the most important point that you made was the fact they call it a free night certificate, but not really. You have to renew the card for it, right? So most hotel cards, annual fee is $95, right? And the free night certificates are capped at how nice a hotel you can stay at. And most of those caps end up being at hotels that are like 150, maybe $200 a night. So your free night certificate is actually worth like a net $75, give or take. And yeah, a lot of people end up altering their travel plans for it. And it's like, what are you doing? You're just recouping the annual fee, but like, that's just getting you back to baseline. You could just close the card and not pay the fee and boom, there you go.
Yeah.
100%. No pushback from me. I agree. Once again, retweet.
I find them decently valuable, mostly just for a hotel when I reposition, since I always like to reposition the day before. Generally, I can use all of them in a year. There has been a time or two where I haven't been able to. In general, I actually find the higher value ones more useful, especially if it's like, oh, I'm already staying at this hotel 5 nights. Now I can add this and stay 6 nights instead. Okay. The lower value ones, definitely a little bit harder to use, but
yeah. I mean, I think this episode I opened up talking about how I was using a free night certificate?
Probably.
Yeah, I think
I'm pretty sure it's this one.
Yeah.
But this is one of the higher value ones. So it's like an 85,000 point free night certificate. And the hotel I'm staying at is like an extra 5,000 points on top of that. To me, that's a no-brainer. And I can drive there. So I don't have to fly somewhere, move hotels twice, and then fly back and... I'm like contradicting my whole first hot take. So I don't know where I am
anymore.
I'm here
for it. That one, yeah. I'm curious to hear the reaction to that one in the comments and such. But I for one, am fully supportive. Travis, you got another hot take for us?
I do. And, you know, if you're still with us, Thank you. You know, it's really funny. Sometimes we start these and we have extra ones because we're like, I don't know if we'll be able to talk for the whole time that we wanted to. And we have. So I'm going to elevate one from one of my backups that I don't think we've talked that I think is actually going to be controversial and just maybe get me banned from speaking at some conferences or something. I don't know. I don't speak at conferences. But if you're still with us, whether it's because you love the wisdom or you are so enraged at everything that we've said, you're in for a treat. This one's probably going to trigger the most people. I don't think that airlines moving away from fixed pricing to flexible pricing is bad. In general, I think that it is slightly better for most people than it is bad. And my reasoning is the award space ecosystem used to be very binary. You had flights that were priced at a saver level, they were cheaper, or you could book any seat at any time at a much higher one. We're talking, you can pay 50,000 points or 250,000 points. And I think having variability in pricing is better for people. You know, if your flight option is, if you know that the lowest is 75,000 points, but then you're seeing an option for 85,000 points, 10,000 extra points is a little bit of category spend throughout the year. So I think that it, and I'm not looking at any data for this, but I think in general, it opens up more options for people than was previously available. And I think people overthink it. You know, they think if it's not the lowest points price, I don't want to pay it. When it's not uncommon that I'm looking and seeing something that's maybe 10 to 20% more expensive than the lowest rate. And if I factor in what I need to pay to reposition for some other savings, whether that's using cash or points, it probably makes more sense to pay the slightly higher fare for the more convenience. And so that's my last hot take, is that I think that in general, the move to variable pricing by airlines is more beneficial. It just takes a little bit of psychological retooling to think about it that way.
I think one key thing with the switch to the dynamic pricing is that a lot of the airlines are just also opening up more award availability.
Yeah.
So if it was just staying like the same amount of award availability with dynamic pricing, bad.
Agreed.
But they're opening up so many, like every single flight for a lot of flights now is available to be booked on points. Some of them might be 400,000 points because of dynamic pricing, but some of them might be 10,000 points. And I don't disagree with you.
Yeah, I generally don't disagree as well. I will offer kind of some pushback from a slightly alternative angle, and that is, I agree with you that it's generally like good for most consumers because it opens up options and it's kind of just more market driven. But on the flip side, I think that the downside and like the turmoil that causes is that lack of predictability or like a sure thing makes it so much harder to kind of learn and understand the points and miles world. Because you'll see like Travis takes a trip to Europe, it was 100,000 points. Like, wait, why can't I find that? Or you're looking at a card, or we're trying to like kind of explain a card, and it's like, yeah, with these points, you could maybe do this, but you could also maybe do that. And like that gets so like kind of gray that it confuses a lot of people. And I almost long for the days where it's like, yes, 100,000 points is definitely going to get you this thing. And I think that kind of helped people along the learning journey, even if the redemption was ultimately a little bit harder to do.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I do think that it makes it harder to learn because it's less predictive. It's less binary. It's you will see this pricing or this pricing. And so it can be harder to determine if you're getting the value that you want for your points. It can be harder to know. But again, this is where like not chasing the highest value and instead getting the experience you want, as long as it's reasonable. You know, some airlines are doing this right. Some airlines are definitely doing this wrong, Delta. But I think in general, the trend with how most airlines are approaching this is more beneficial than harmful, even if it does increase the knowledge gap that's necessary to learn to kind of pick up on that.
Yeah, I think it makes the, like you're saying, the predictability of it harder. Ultimately, it's the same process of just know your transfer partners, run through every single one, pick the cheapest one that is what you want. And at the end of the day, then you should be good to go. But yeah, it makes it much harder to know, oh, these 60,000 points will get me this far.
Yeah.
Man, I thought y'all were going to yell at me for that one.
No, sorry. Totally same page. In a minute, listeners, we're going to ask you to share your own ideas for hot takes or reactions to anything that you've heard us say here on the podcast. But first, I want to go through a kind of a quick lightning round here of some of our additional hot takes. We don't have to kind of dive into a lot of these, but just ones that we kind of want to wrap up with here. I'll go first on that one. And I think this is such a hot take that I'm going to present it as this is just fact that people misinterpret, right? I think most credit score advice that you read on the internet or hear from other people is misguided at best and oftentimes just entirely inaccurate. And time spent sourcing credit score advice from those sources is actually a net negative for most people.
Are you going to be able to do this one as a lightning round?
No, someone jump in with your next one before I just start ranting on this one.
My next one is too many people chase going to the nicest lounge rather than a lounge that's good enough. And they'll sit there and wait in line for 20 minutes to hope that they have someplace to sit and that the food is fresh. Sometimes just because the lounge isn't as glamorous doesn't mean that it's not going to be more relaxing.
But you have to do it for the gram, Travis.
Yeah. I'll pull one from here. The taxes and fees that you pay sometimes are not that bad, especially if you're going to spend money repositioning just to avoid paying the taxes and fees.
Yeah.
That one was not that spicy, apparently.
No, I need. Well, we'll see. I guess this will go live and we'll see, like, you know, 900 notifications from YouTube. And it's like, uh-oh, the comments are going crazy. So, but speaking of that, we want to hear your hot take. Please drop it in the comments. You reply to other hot takes that you see in there. We're going to put a post up in our Facebook group for this episode. We're going to engage with everyone else's opinions on that. We all might need to take the day off of social media that day for our own mental health. But, you know, or put up your own post and tag us with your spicy takes, if you will, on social media. We'd love to respond to those. Let's kind of wrap this one up. A quick reminder that points and miles has a lot of gray area in which you have to apply it to you. Yes, there's kind of general guidelines, strategy, rules to follow. But sometimes you have to break the rules. You have to come up with a hot take. And learning and getting to that more advanced point in the hobby is going to be better for you overall. Even if you end up agreeing with the crowd or not, you're going to come out saving a bunch of money on travel, having better lifetime experiences, visiting lounges that are just okay, just because you don't want to transit across four terminals, you know, maybe changing hotels three times in Sydney. Whatever is up for you, we're here to support it. And the best way to get to that point is to sign up for My10X. That's our free web tool, including the redemption tracker, which somehow came up like four or five times today, despite not being on the outline whatsoever. Going to teach you everything you need to know about the basics of points and miles, help you with seeing all your points balances in one place, recommending next card, lounge finding for your upcoming trips. It just makes this entire thing so much easier for anyone. And again, it is completely free for you to use. Please do leave us a review of this podcast, this episode. Kindly give us 5 stars, share this with a friend. Again, this might, kind of like the last one, this might not be the best first episode for someone to start with. Send them to episodes 1 through 6. But for anyone who's kind of deep in the points and miles space, especially if it's someone who you know is like really into like cents per point or category spend or like would go against one of these hot takes, please share it with them. I'm curious to hear their thoughts on it as well. I might regret saying that last one.
Yeah.
Last but not least, be sure to join our 10X Travel Insiders Facebook group, the largest community on points and miles in the world. Currently over 385,000 people who are all just waiting to light us up in the comments when we post this show. I look forward to that. But we look forward to engaging with you in the group. We thank you so much for listening to Take Off, a Points and Miles podcast by 10X Travel. For all of us here, I'm Bryce. Appreciate you listening today, and we'll see you on the next episode. Bye now.